This is VOA News. I'm Gene Randall. In a sign of the times, U.S. diplomats are warning that commercial airliners flying over the Persian Gulf face a risk of being misidentified. It is another episode in the continuing story of unease in the region. We get details from AP correspondent Jackie Quinn.
The warning was relayed from U.S. diplomatic posts from the Federal Aviation Administration. It underscores the risk that the new tensions between the U.S. and Iran are posing to global air travel in the Gulf region. It's also a grim reminder. In 1988, the U.S. mistook an Iranian passenger jet for a warplane. 290 people aboard were killed in that incident.
That was AP correspondent Jackie Quinn. Oil giant ExxonMobil has evacuated its foreign workers from an oil field in the southern Iraqi province of Basra amid heightened tensions in the Middle East. The chief of Iraq's state-owned South Oil Company said the evacuation was a precautionary and temporary measure, that there was no indication of danger. There has been a stunning election upset in Australia, where Prime Minister Scott Morrison, overcoming long odds, beat back a challenge from the opposition Labour Party. Here is Phil Mercer for VOA in Sydney.
For months, opinion polls had indicated that Australians had grown tired of feuds within Scott Morrison's Conservative government. It's had three prime ministers since it was elected in 2013, but fought this campaign on its economic record. The Prime Minister had said the opposition wasn't fit to govern and couldn't manage money. He's celebrating his unexpected triumph with party loyalists and his wife and two daughters.
I have always believed in miracles. I'm standing with the three biggest miracles in my life here tonight. And tonight we've been delivered another one.
That report was filed by Phil Mercer in Sydney. More news at voanews.com. This is VOA News. The United States is removing tariffs which caused a lot of political outrage in Canada and Mexico when they were imposed a year ago. AP correspondent Sagar Magani has that report.
The president's lifting import taxes on Canadian and Mexican steel and aluminum, clearing the way for approval of a trade pact between the three nations. He slapped on the tariffs last year in the name of national security, and Canada had resisted approving the deal while they were in place.
They were hurting Canadian consumers, Canadian workers, and American workers and American consumers.
Prime Minister Justin Trudeau in Ontario shortly before President Trump spoke here in Washington, where he did not address the tariffs, but push Congress to approve the deal.
A fantastic deal for our country.
The White House says he's now holding off on deciding whether to put tariffs on foreign vehicles, which would have a big impact on Europe and Japan. Sagar Magani at the White House.
The United Nations says hospitals and other healthcare facilities are targets for airstrikes in the rebel-held areas of northwest Syria. It is warning of a humanitarian catastrophe. Here's Lisa Schlein reporting for VOA in Geneva.
Over the past 2 weeks, at least 100 civilians reportedly have been killed or injured in clashes between Russian-backed Syrian forces and Al-Qaeda-associated rebels. Dozens of medical and health facilities, as well as schools, have been hit by airstrikes, and more than 180,000 people reportedly have fled their homes toward supposedly safer areas. But UN senior humanitarian advisor Najat Rushdie notes there are no safe areas in Idlib. She says nearly 3 million people in the Syrian province are essentially trapped.
That was Lisa Schlein for VOA from Geneva. It is part of a pattern. U.S. Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin has defied a congressional subpoena and refused to hand over copies of President Trump's tax returns. Here's AP's Mike Gracia.
The Trump administration missed Friday's deadline set by the House Ways and Means Committee to produce 6 years of President Donald Trump's tax returns. In a letter, Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin said he will not comply with the subpoena because the request lacks a legitimate legislative purpose. The rejection was expected. Chairman Richard Neal said the Ways and Means Committee will take the matter to court, possibly as early as next week. Democrats point to a 1924 law that directs the IRS to furnish tax return information when requested to the chairs of Congress's tax writing committees. Mike Gracia, Washington.
In London, Brexit compromise talks have collapsed after British Prime Minister Theresa May announced a timetable for her exit from office. What remains missing? A compromise. More news at voanews.com. Gene Randall, VOA News.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Douglas Impunga. Peter Clote has the day off.
He says there is no one who will rig this election. Those who registered should go to vote, and you should vote for UTM leaders for the country to develop. Vote wisely and without fear.
Malawians go to the polls on Tuesday in local parliamentary and presidential elections.
At the moment, the financial situation for many of the humanitarian organizations is quite dire. There is a real need to set up the response. Otherwise, activities will have to be scaled down, and the impact on the future of the epidemics will be extremely serious.
The International Federation of Red Cross and Red Crescent Societies says the Ebola epidemic in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo could spread to urban areas and across international borders.
This day is a very great day. We choose it because it's the day we took our independence from southern Somalia.
And the breakaway state of Somaliland prepares to celebrate 28 years since it declared independence from Somalia. Those stories and more coming up right here on Nightline Africa. Malawians go to the polls Tuesday in local parliamentary and presidential elections. Seven candidates are running for president, but the real battle is among incumbent president Peter Mutharika, Vice President Solas Klaus Chilima, and main opposition leader Lazarus Chakwera. With just a few days to go, it remains difficult to predict the winner. As Lameka Masina reports for VOA from Blantyre.
Candidates are crisscrossing the country to woo voters in what many says are Malawi's most highly contested elections since the start of multi-party politics in 1993. The opposition Malawi Congress Party is determined to return to power after losing the 1994 elections. Some in the party, including its presidential candidate Lazarus Chakwera, say nepotism is rampant in the current administration, a charge the government denies. Chakwera says if there is a leader in Malawi at the moment who can unite the whole country to stop the tendency of nepotism, employing people based on ethnicity or regionalism, it's me, Chakwera. Vice President Chilima, who leads the United Transformation Movement, or UTM party, says corruption forced him to break away from the ruling party. Multiple times during his campaign, he accused the governing party of planning to rig the elections. But now he says the voting is safe. He says there is no one who will rig this election. Those who registered should go to vote, and you should vote for UTM leaders for the country to develop. Vote wisely and without fear. Meanwhile, President Mutharika tells voters he will continue developing the country if he wins a second five-year term. He says his administration has so far constructed 94 bridges in different areas. He says this has never happened in the country's history, but we are doing that, he says. The president also says that, therefore, the government will continue to do what it has been doing. Observers are not able to predict who will win Tuesday's vote. Political analyst Sherif Kaisi says the outcome depends on the rural areas where more than 80% of Malawians live.
Because people in town, you can see even the numbers who registered, they are not much convincing numbers like those in the villages.
Prospective voters have their take on the polls. Kathy Kita is among them.
I'm expecting for a leader who is going to put youth first.
Moses Kaluza Jumembe is more exact on who he wants.
If I want to make things change, According to the current situation in Malawi, then I will vote for Chakwera.
Caroline Maganga says she wants the current administration to continue.
With Arthur Peter Mutharika, why is it that he's going to win? Because I've seen his manifesto from what he has talked about, and I've also, I know how he has been doing, because he's already a president. He was the past president right now.
About 6.7 million Malawians are registered to vote. Results are expected by May 29. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blanta.
The International Federation of Red Cross and Red Crescent Societies has warned that the Ebola epidemic in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo could spread to urban areas and across international borders because of heightened insecurity and a serious shortage of money. DR Congo Minister of Health reports 1,700 cases of Ebola, including 1,500 deaths, which indicates a 66% fatality rate. Lisa Shrine reports for VOA from IFRC headquarters in Geneva.
The Ebola epidemic in conflict-ridden North Kivu and Ituri provinces started 40 weeks ago on August 1st. What is particularly frightening about the latest situation report is that 20% of overall cases have occurred in just the last 3 weeks. The International Red Cross Federation finds this sharp upsurge alarming. It is urging the international community to redouble its efforts to contain this deadly virus before it escalates further. The IFRC's Director of Health and Care, Emmanuel Capobianco, says the Ebola response faces a double jeopardy of insecurity and critical underfunding. He says the security situation is complex and will require a range of responses, but he notes the funding situation could be fixed now.
At the moment, the financial situation for many of the humanitarian organizations is quite dire. There is a real need to set up the response. Otherwise, activities will have to be scaled down, and the impact on the future of the epidemics will be extremely serious.
People who get infected with the Ebola virus have a very high risk of dying. Studies from the 2014 historic outbreak in West Africa show that between 60% and 80% of Ebola cases were linked to Ebola-infected bodies at traditional burials. Capobianco says Red Cross efforts to provide communities with safe and dignified burials are meeting with increasing success.
Up to now, there have been up to 5,000 safe and dignified burials conducted, and they are conducted for, as I mentioned before, the people who died, either in the community or the Ebola treatment centers of Ebola confirmed, also for people who may be just suspected of Ebola. And that's why the number 5,000 is so high. That is a critical part of the work that we have done, and which at the moment is threatened by the lack of funding.
Capobianco says the Red Cross has received less than half of the $30 million it needs to carry out its Ebola control activities across affected parts of DR Congo, as well as preparedness efforts in neighboring Burundi, Rwanda, South Sudan, and Uganda. He warns Red Cross operations will be forced to close within the next 2 weeks without additional urgent investment. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
In Sierra Leone, the former president, Ernest Bai Koroma, has expressed concern about his personal safety and that of his family. He says the government has violated his fundamental rights and that of the constitution by not providing for his safety. Mr. Koroma said police officers in his personal security detail were disarmed without consulting him. For reaction from the government regarding the former president's concerns, my colleague Peter Klote reached Information Minister Mohamed Rahman Sware in the capital of Freetown.
We are taken aback because this is a routine security rotation. It's normal in security circles for personnel to be rotated after some period. This is exactly what happened in the case of the former president. He has been given his full complement of security guards since his government took over. But it's normal for routine security rotations to happen. Even in my case, just a couple of days ago, my security guards approached me to say they have been recalled to headquarters for a deployment. It's normal. So we are surprised that there has been so much talk about it, especially in social media circles.
Well, the former president is also expressing concern that the government failed to even alert him that this was going to happen. And that is what is prompting some of his supporters to say that it appears the government wants to harm him with such a move.
Well, firstly, the law under which he is supposed to be provided security guards does not make any provision for him to be contacted, for him to have prior information. This is left in the competent hands of the security leadership. In spite of that provision, efforts were still made to notify him to the security leadership. Even in the current situation, for the president and vice president, they are assigned security guards without them necessarily having any say in the arrangement. So this is normal. In other jurisdictions around the world, security guards are changed every 6 months. Out here, the security use their discretion to ensure that they did this change after 1 year. So this is not really anything strange. Nobody has done anything. I mean, we take the responsibility as a state to ensure the safety and security of the former president and his family, because after all, this is provided for in the Pensions Act. And as a government that is democratically elected, we are committed to all statutory and constitutional provisions, especially as it relates to former service personnel, the former president, vice president, and such others who are entitled to any benefits under this act and related other provisions.
How is your government handling this concern? Because he said he strongly deplores what he calls the incessant hounding of his security data, which he believes has clearly become a pattern, and that this is a threat to his safety and as a deliberate violation of his right, as provided for in Part 3 of the Miscellaneous Retiring Benefits of the Pension and Retiring Benefits of President and Vice President Act No. 2 of 1986.
Peter, we remain very committed to ensuring the safety and security of the former president, family members, and all others who are entitled to security under the provisions you just mentioned. But let me, however, note that very recently, on be precise, on the 3rd of April, at this very airport where I now sit, a member of the airport security staff was set upon by security guards of the former president. They beat him and he lost a tooth in the process. That matter was reported to the police and investigations are ongoing. So this is the kind of thing we are talking about. Other citizens also have rights, and nobody, whosoever they may be, has right to violate their own individual human rights. But as a government, like I say, we are irrevocably committed to ensuring the safety and the security of the former president and his family. I mean, we are surprised that, you know, for a routine security exercise, you know, there has been so much anxiety around it. We wish to use this opportunity to reiterate our commitment to ensuring that all constitutional provisions, all statutory provisions relating to his safety and that of his family will continue to be addressed and upheld.
Well, recently there were reports in the U.S. about some people receiving scammed phone calls from 232, which is the country code of Sierra Leone. How is your government tackling this problem?
Well, our government has taken the bold, unprecedented step of authorizing the International Telecommunications Union to delist their number from the direct to decommission it. So the 21 number is no longer available for any fraudsters. So that being said, we have also set up a local committee to investigate whatever might have happened leading to the breach of those numbers.
That was Sierra Leone's Information Minister, Mohamed Rahman Soare. He spoke with my colleague Peter Clote from Freetown. Two Rwandan men linked to the murder of 8 Western tourists in Uganda in the late 1990s have been allowed to resettle in Australia as part of a refugee swap deal with the US. An Australian man who survived the attack says he's shocked the suspects have been granted asylum. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports for VOA.
The two men were secretly resettled in Australia despite being accused of killing tourists. 4 Britons, 2 Americans and 2 New Zealanders who were on a guerrilla watching tour in Uganda in the late 1990s. The suspects arrived in Australia last November.
as part of a deal to exchange refugees made between Canberra and the Obama administration in 2016. Though he criticised the agreement that seen the transfer of a few hundred refugees from Australian migrant detention centres in the South Pacific, President Trump has honoured it. The Rwandan men were extradited to the US following the killings and held in immigration detention for 15 years after efforts to convict them failed. Their transfer to Australia has prompted difficult questions for the government on the eve of a general election. A former New Zealand minister said the resettlement was incredibly insensitive. Australian Prime Minister Scott Morrison says the men were carefully vetted.
The two individuals that have been subject of this reporting were subject to the security and character assessments and the work that must be done in terms of assessing whether there are any war crimes that are associated with persons who are coming as a refugee. And that security process cleared those individuals.
Peyton Rooke is an Australian who survived the atrocity.
I still can see images of people. I can still hear the gunshots. I can still see the burning truck. I can still see, you know, the unfortunate person who was murdered. And I can still vividly remember the reactions of other people when they found out the news that we had people killed. I didn't understand why we would let two people accused of this into Australia.
The suspects were reportedly members of a Hutu rebel group in Rwanda, which had links to the 1994 genocide of the minority Tutsi community. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Six months after Sudan's pro-democracy demonstrations began to gather force, and 1 month after President Bashir was ousted, the popular uprising continues. In this first part of our two-part series, we'll meet 26-year-old Marina Al-Neil, originally from Sudan. She now lives in New York and provides mental health care to victims of trauma. She was inspired to visit her homeland in December to join the protests. VOA's Adam Phillips reports.
That's a YouTube video clip of pro-democracy demonstrators in Khartoum. It was a flood of social media posts like this that inspired Marine Al-Neil to fly from New York to Sudan to support the uprising. Since the 1990s, when Al-Neil's family fled Sudan, they had yearned for an uprising there. Within 2 days of arriving, Al-Neil found herself in the thick of things. She recalls marching peacefully with friends in downtown Khartoum.
You know, everybody was just chanting together, and all of a sudden, this truck comes out of nowhere and starts shooting randomly. So everybody just ducked down, and I remember looking at the faces of the people shooting, and it's just very difficult to try to comprehend what is this person thinking, why are they doing this. You try to relate to the security forces as humans, but you find it very difficult to understand their perspective.
Along with danger, there was often joy at the protests.
So one of my favorite demonstrations was the one that happened in Omdurman. That's where I'm from. It was huge. One of the main streets was just flooding with people. And you see people on both sides of the street just cheering anyone who's running to catch the demonstration. It sounds like some sort of festival. The joy that comes out of it, we're all fighting for the same thing.
More trouble came later in a district known for people sympathetic to the uprising. Soon after Al-Neil and some friends and relatives joined the demonstration, the protesters were hemmed in by state security vehicles.
Up until that point, it wasn't scary. The solidarity gives you a sense of security. But then the tear gas started.
The protesters scattered. Al-Neil became separated from her group. She and some other women were offered refuge in a small room in a nearby house.
We were in that room for perhaps half an hour, and we heard the security forces break into the house next door, and then you would hear people screaming, then gunshots, then no more screaming. So what I concluded from that was that they're just shooting everyone. So that was the frightening part, is that they are not arresting people. They're just killing everyone.
The group agreed to fight if the security forces came for them. Some picked up canes. Others grabbed the metal blades from a ceiling fan. Al-Neil picked up a fire poker.
But it was still very frightening. I didn't know what was happening to the other people outside.
The police raided the house and began firing at the ceiling with their semi-automatic rifles.
The protesters were herded outside. Anil was relieved to see that her fellow demonstrators had been detained in trucks but not killed. She knew escape was impossible.
They were holding batons and metal sticks, and each one would hit you as you were walking. So I think in my head I was thinking, you know what, if I'm going to be beaten up and I'm going to be detained, let me at least do one thing that would make me happy at that moment.
She looked to her left and saw a security officer in civilian clothes, an indication of higher rank. She grabbed him and kicked him in the groin.
I screamed at him, "Do you actually like this government?" And it's definitely what triggered the other officers to start beating me. But it was worth it. Absolutely no regrets. I think that was the one thing that kept me going while we were detained. I was so happy that I did that. I expressed myself. It's not about physically hurting him. It's about asserting my power, that it doesn't matter that you're the one with the guns and the rifles. I wasn't just a helpless victim, you know, and none of the other protesters were helpless victims.
The last thing Maureen Al-Neil saw before she and her comrades were taken into custody was the police beating some young men nearly to death. Tomorrow, in the second part of our series, we'll hear what happened next. Adam Phillips, VOA News, New York.
The breakaway state of Somaliland is preparing to celebrate 28 years since declared independence from Somalia. No country recognizes Somaliland as a sovereign nation, but in the capital, preparations for the celebrations are underway. Sarah Kimani reports for VOA from Hygeisha.
Inside a boardroom in the Somaliland Parliament, legislator Abdurrahman Atan explains his country's struggle for international recognition.
There's a legitimate case for Somaliland to be recognized, legitimate case to look at what has been done, legitimate case about the yearnings of Somaliland people to be free and independent, and they have the right to do so, and they have the right to live in peace. They have the right to become part of the international community.
Outside, the streets of Hargeisa are receiving a facelift ahead of Saturday, when thousands of people will gather at Independence Square to celebrate Somaliland's 28th anniversary. Despite the lack of international recognition, Somalilanders like Hargeisa student Mohamed Abdullahi are looking forward to the day.
According to ourselves, we are an independent country, and that's our broad, and that's what we are very happy to see. My people celebrating this historic day.
Trader Ahmed Adan feels the same.
This day is a very great day. We choose it because it's the day we took our independence from southern Somalia.
Somaliland, a former British colony, briefly gained independence in 1961. 5 days later, it merged with Somalia after Mogadishu gained independence from Italy. After years of conflict and the ouster of former Somali dictator Mohamed Siad Barre, Somaliland declared independence in 1991. Somaliland now has its own police, army, and currency, and has held regular elections for parliament and a president. It enjoys relative peace and stability, and like Somalia, where African troops are helping the government fight Al-Shabaab and Islamic State militants. But without recognition, Somaliland cannot get foreign aid, and its economy is largely dependent on diaspora remittances. Atan rejects the idea that other African countries will break apart if the world recognizes Somaliland.
They talk about Bandrabox. If, for example, they recognize Somaliland, they think other African regions will also ask for independence. But that's not true. Somaliland has been an independent country before they joined Somalia.
Every year, Somaliland invites representatives of foreign governments to Hargeisa to lobby its case. This year is no different. And Violet Akurut, vice chair of the Ugandan Parliament's Foreign Relations Committee, has indicated support.
If our country, if our president recognizes Somaliland, it will be so easy for Uganda to be able to lobby at the African Union for the recognition of Somaliland.
However, the United Nations and the African Union have refused to recognize Somaliland as an independent country. Their position is that once Somalia is peaceful and has a working central government, then the two can be reunited. Hargeisa resident Mohamed Barwani wants none of that.
the Somalian people decided to withdraw that unit of Soma from Somalia.
He hopes that someday the rest of the world will recognize that fact. Sarah Kimani for VOA News, Hargeisa, Somaliland.
This is VOA and you're listening to Nightline Africa, and coming up in the second half of the program, our Saturday music spot from our collection of music from across the continent. And now it's time for our Saturday music spot. Yes, time to relax and enjoy great music from Africa.
Can't you let it work and see if I am true? Just give me a chance to show you what love is. Give you peace, just let me say this. Me go down in knees, me beg you. Me have to let you know when me getting on me heart for you. It's true love, God, that's no lie. Every time me see you, my heart keeps pounding like a drum. I'm ready for show you how much me love you. By giving you me, I'm giving you everything me have. Every day me go please you, I never diss you. Girl, you me a desire. Beautiful princess, I'm crazy over you.
I'm crazy, my baby.
So why can't you let it work and see if I am true? Just give me a chance to show you what love is. Give you peace, just let me say this.
Come on, I'm feeling the girls and everything I do, give me a chance. So much I wanna share with you. I wanna be there for you, to love and care for you. I'll be your shoulder when you cry, I'll shed a tear for you. Girl, I mean it, I wanna get all that cry with you. Girl, me love you, this is no lie. This love is out of this world and I'm so high. Everyone say I'm crazy, now I know why. When I look in your eyes, enough, become a new one, say you love me rough. My little
princess, I'm crazy over you.
I'm crazy for you, lady.
So why can't you let it work and see if I am true?
Just let me hit your heart, girl.
Just give me a chance to show you what love is. Give you peace, just let me say this. Me go down, me knees, me beg you, please.
Your face and your shape, girl, them I get in. Beautiful princess, please take me interest. Don't let another man take what is mine.
You know, say I've been digging you for a long time. Now is the right time for us to combine. You dey on my mind every minute, every hour for sure. Girl, you have me a desire. Princess, I'm crazy over you.
Baby, my lady.
So why can't you let it work and see if I am true? Just give me a chance to show you what love is. Give you peace, just let me say this. Me go down, me knees, me beg. Beautiful princess, I'm crazy over you. So why can't you let it work and see if I am true? Just give me a chance to show you what love is. Give you peace, just let me say this. Me go down, me knees, me beg you please.
Mamacita, te amo. Love the way that you are always for me. Señorita, te amo. Love the way that the booty rotates for me. Puede cuestiones, mi amiga. Girl, you know that I love you. Oh, oh, oh. Anything that you want me to, girl, I can do for you. Because when I tell it, I know I will give you the love and show you one more. If the money you want, baby, cut it off. Love me, touch me, kiss me, baby, don't go. Don't go. Te amo. Yeah, you know I could die for you. Angelina, te amo. I feel kill any bugger for you. Baby, please don't go. Puede cuestiones, mi amiga. Girl, I just won't be your friend. Ya mi na kupenda. Baby, please don't leave me, oh. Don't leave me, oh. Because when I tell it, I know I go give you the love and show you one more. If the money you want, baby, cut it off. Love me, touch me, kiss me, baby, don't go. Don't go. Oh, queen, man, up, you make you alone.
bolingo ndomolo zilipendwa kwanga chipolo polo zilipendwa na maji ya kandoro zilipendwa simba wa morogoro zilipendwa tani spati sukari kuru kabisa zilipendwa hiviyu kwa PMB dogo latifa zilipendwa babu tale wapi papa misifa zilipendwa squeezy party atwenda giki bisa zilipendwa mpira na pele zilipendwa tanu na nyerere zilipendwa ashangedere zilipendwa Alusi mabere Eti uze nyumba wekeshi maba Eti lazimishe ale kukata Sabuni kicherema Zilipendwa Mabanda ya sinema Zilipendwa Ipumba na mlema Zilipendwa Diamondi na wema Zilipendwa Izo ni zama za kale Zama za zamani Sangulo mepepe kale Kale yo Nakina sogi rogi Zilipendwa Chanali analogi Zilipendwa Uviza saibogi Zilipendwa Banda mea nodi Zilipendwa Unani bipu nkupigie umeiweka vocha Ule wewe lipe mie umeniona rofa Tena Na madada wenye majina Acheni visa Unaita ukale dina Unakwenda tisa Nywele za kichina Pochi za kwa zima Zena na betina Bashite kwa jima Izo ni zama za kama za zamani Sangulo mapepe kani Na mitaba chani TV kwa jirani Akira ifani Azari haifani Hiya nini kunichunguza naishi wapi Nala tepate kwa maini ya umakati Kuto kunikali ya chini unakamati Oh ya rabi masikini kunizihaki Samba mapangala Zilipendwa Kifanki kajala Zilipendwa Onyango na jangala Zilipendwa Lufufu mkandala Zilipendwa Fieni ni vidomo domo Tutupia nitunguli Kisa pesa za mgomo Musimu wa makufuli Bongo mani yondo Zilipendwa Sikinde msondo Zilipendwa Magari ya udongo Zilipendwa Abu walori yondo Zilipendwa Izo ni zama za kale Zilivu maga sana Sangulo mapepe kale TV za kichogo Zilipendwa Wakina mandojo Zilipendwa Wakina iogo Zilipendwa Wakina tupogo Zilipendwa Eti msiba ukiona bundi Unataka kupagawa Tulale makundi makundi Kuopopo popo bawa Chuena Nitampata wapi Zilipendwa Chuena Wazile nyakati Zilipendwa Kujifanya mapanga zuna Eti wamepinda Wengine wabeba vyuma Na kuna malinda Didi amini dada Zilipendwa Miuno ya ichi baba Zilipendwa Domo chai jabu Zilipendwa Michezo ya kibaba baba Zilipendwa Wale wapiga madili sasa limbaya Zilipendwa Hizi zama za Magufuli siza jakaya Zilipendwa Ugombi wa Mr. Nice na Dudubaya Zilipendwa Fika tuni vya madenge baba ubaya Zilipendwa Wago mchungu Mr. Bini Wapi bambo Wale wasamiaji wa melini Wase wangambo Ifiyo kwa pibeja mini Wamambo jambo Wavete na muaporini Fita na rango Nanda mjela jela Zilipendwa Kidali kombolela Zilipendwa Maxi na zembwela Zilipendwa Yumane chana fela Zilipendwa Izo ni zama za kale Zama za zamani Sangulo mapepe kale Kama ndadazi munda Zilipendwa Alumanzira ndumba Zilipendwa Simu za dole gumba Zilipendwa Johari na kanumba Zilipendwa
Wasafi Petals from the morning bloom Your laughter a joy to remember Heaven has blessed me with you The very day you gave
eyes. Oh baby, oh baby, I see love in your smile. You tell me coochie, coochie, yeah, I understand. You tell me coochie, coochie, yeah. Oh baby, oh baby. Supernatural, I can hardly live a moment without you, because of you, oh baby, oh baby, I see me in your eyes, oh baby, oh baby, I see love in your smile, you tell me coochie, coochie, yeah, I understand.
Agatha Tico Candy, now it's a And that was our Saturday Music Spot. I sincerely hope you enjoyed the music. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. From the rest of the Nightline Africa team, managing editor Shaka Salim, producer Saida Hamdun, we thank you for joining us tonight and join us tomorrow Sunday. I'm Douglas Mpuga.